This is the story of an extraordinary woman. She is extraordinary because she saw the limits placed upon her by her world as a result of her gender and simply decided that they didn't apply to her. She saw clearly the spaces where women could not go, stormed into them anyway, and was murdered as a result. This is the story of an empress who was the sister, niece, wife, and mother of emperors. It is incest and murder, wars and conquest, plots and prayers. It is a little of everything a good story should have, because it is, importantly, a story. Agrippina the Younger was born Julia Agrippina and lived from November 15 to March 59, Common Era. Her life spanned and was intimately bound up in the reigns of four of the first five Roman emperors, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, and Nero. Which all sounds great for source material on her. After all, these early emperors appear to be pretty well covered in sources. They're the emperors everyone can name. Except that well covered in Roman terms generally means just more than one fragmentary source. And Agrippina is a woman in a world where women were considered to be staggeringly uninteresting, if not totally irrelevant. As a result, we have just three major literary sources that mention Agrippina with any detail, and a total of seven literary sources from the entire corpus of Latin literature that think she was interesting or significant enough to deserve a single line, one of which is a play. That's from the opening of Agrippina, the Most Extraordinary Woman of the Roman World by Emma Southern. And I must say, having read the book, she was quite an extraordinary woman in any time. What's all the fuss about women and history, you may ask? Well, our author tells us this. When Agrippina is not standing next to a man, she slips back into the darkness of history. History is mostly darkness. All we get to see in our sources are the very few men and women who managed, through luck or hard work or ingrained privilege, to burst into the tiny spotlight that historians hold and be seen by doing something very, very good or very, very bad or simply being emperor. For every little head that blinks in the glare of the historian's spotlight, there are 100,000 or more whose important, significant lives have been untouched by it. Go to Highgate Cemetery in London, for example, and you will see the graves of Douglas Adams, Karl Marx, and you walk past a further 169,998 bodies of women, men, and children whose names and stories will disappear with their gravestones, whose lives have vanished in the darkness. You will step over their graves to get to the famous ones. Those who stand in the spotlight reflect a little light, though, and with the reflected light we can see the people standing next to them, their wives, children, close friends. We see Agrippina in history only because she was the daughter, the niece, the wife, the mother of powerful men. The sheer multitude of her relationships with famous men means we see her a little better than most women, but we still see only fragments. What this all means, beyond me having to moan about how hard it is being a Roman historian, is that there is no objective capital T truth about Agrippina. There is only a series of stories drawn from other people's stories about men. The only way through it is to be honest about that. This story is as much mine as it is Agrippina's because I have chosen how to present the information I have. But it is a good story about a woman who deserves her own place in history. It is about a woman so important that men do everything they can to hurt her by accusing her of incest, adultery, murder, and child abuse. It is about a woman who ran the Roman Empire for longer than a lot of male emperors, and about how the men who controlled the world reacted to that. It is about, at the center of it all, power. As you can tell, this is delightfully tart, sarcastic, and at the same time thoughtful and insightful. She points out that we know so little about ancient Roman history, and what we do know is about the men of Rome, as you've just heard, and those histories were written most often after the facts were recounted, Most of the stories she recounts about Agrippina, for instance, are 100, 200 plus years old. Here is the skepticism coming in. Apparently, she tells us, the facts are presented as much as rumor and supposition. Fact, as we understand it today, was not something the Romans necessarily indulged in. The flow of Agrippina's story is disrupted from time to time by the author's revelations about other Roman women and their attempts to influence the storyline that Agrippina has set out for her family, most notable that of her son Nero, and yes, that Nero, that emperor, all of which make the reader's support for this strong-willed, intelligent woman a bit more tepid, or at least a bit more withheld, than it perhaps ought to be, given the author's strong endorsement for Agrippina's life story. But that she is the mother of the monster of an emperor that Nero was also makes Agrippina and her backstory all the more interesting. Did she not perceive the atrocities of Nero to be in his youth? Did she not try to quiet his ambitions for lust and power over the Roman Empire, or at least over his fellow noble families? Did Agrippina's own desire for power, or at the very least for finding a place of comfort and safety in the world in which she lived, influence her son's later actions? As our author is wont to point out time and time again, which is not to say incorrectly, Agrippina's life from at least her teenage years forward were fraught with danger and mayhem, rarely of her own making. As a woman born and raised as a high-born Roman citizen, she and her family were necessarily distrusted by the empresses under whose reign she found herself living. And Agrippina, for good or ill, was not a woman who took to living in the relatively safe countryside, away from the hustles of Rome, to be long-lived. And so this Roman matron's life was perhaps doomed to be one of frustration, of high joy and confusion. Her very position in society condemned her and her family to praise. She was the daughter of the much-esteemed General Germanicus, the general whose popularity, due to his reputed military prowess out there on the hinterlands, as much as to his legendary good looks and charming personality, and to suspicion of potential usurpation of the levers of power, she was the daughter of the esteemed General Germanicus, a general whose fame in his short life threatened to outshine that of the sitting emperor. She was also sister of the repulsive Emperor Caligula, and Agrippina's connection to the much-acclaimed Emperor Augustus enabled her to marry her uncle, the Emperor Claudius. She became, it is said, his fourth wife. He, Claudius, would be her third husband. She then persuaded the Emperor Claudius to adopt her son Nero as Claudius' successor, and, it is rumored, she then had Claudius poisoned so that her son could take the throne, only to have her own son, the now Emperor Nero, have her killed in what, if that murder was indeed ordered, can be seen as a son's grave turnabout with his own scheming mother. Well, through all the conniving, all the sex, all the murders, there is incest aplenty, true or not, that we are told again and again that marriage between close relatives was considered abhorrent. Agrippina and her crew seemed to have little compunction with it themselves. Perhaps it was her desire for power, or, as our author would tell us as well, perhaps it is the biographers who desired to see her only as a scheming temptress who were at the root of her sexual proclivities. Our author, attempting at least to be moderately objective, offers both options for our consideration, though she tilts strongly to the idea that Agrippina's biographers were as much rumor mongers as they were seekers after truth and wisdom, which, of course, they claimed to be. The book goes on and on with more juicy gossip and more attempts to explain that juicy gossip than you're going to read outside of a supermarket tabloid, perhaps. But this is truly indeed meant to be biography. It is meant to be history and written by an actual Roman historian. She does her best to pull the real Agrippina out of the darkness that is so much of history. She ends her book with these words. Agrippina was born 1 year after her great-grandfather Augustus died. She lived through the reigns of Tiberius, Gaius, Claudius, and Nero. As the daughter of an emperor, the sister, niece, wife, and mother of emperors, she was never paralleled. She pioneered a new role for an imperial woman, an active, powerful role that stepped outside the boundaries of acceptable female behavior. For a brief flicker of time, she succeeded, ruling with her son, by his side as the Empress of Rome. In return for her moment in the light of history, she was abused, humiliated, and eventually hacked to death. She stood as an example and a warning to Roman women for centuries. In the grand span of history, Agrippina's 43 years of life are a blink. Male historians have argued that even to the Romans she never meant anything, but no woman tried what she had tried for another century. And 40 years after she died, after the civil wars that followed her son's rule, after his golden house was torn down, his statues were destroyed, and the Colosseum was built where Nero once built a golden statue of himself, a new colossal statue was erected by Emperor Trajan in his new forum. It was of Agrippina. She lived again to oversee Rome, the first empress of Rome. What a story. How incredibly well told, as long as you're fine with a little sex and violence and all kinds of daring do going on. Agrippina, the most extraordinary woman of the Roman world, so the book tells us, so the author argues. It's quite a read. I think it's one you're going to enjoy. It's available at all of our fine local libraries. Who wouldn't want this on their shelves? And certainly at the West Lafayette Public Library.